Accession number 6374, rule number 1.
Mr. Maguire, reel 1. You were captured, Mr. Maguire, in Singapore in February 1942. Can you tell me which unit you were serving with?
Yes, I was with Malaya Command Signals.
Did your units have a number?
My unit? No, it was simply known as Malaya Command Signals.
And what was your own role in that unit?
I was a sergeant. I was supervising the signal office in Sime Road, Singapore. But before that, I was in Fort Canning signal office.
So you had a supervisory capacity?
Yes.
How many men did you have under you?
6.
And you were the signals were going to and from where, mostly?
The signals were going by radio to Melbourne, Australia, to Chongqing, China, Rangoon, New Delhi, Washington, D.C., and Aldershot in Britain.
And what type of messages were passing? Can you recollect the nature of them?
Yes, there were situation reports.
What does that mean exactly? Just saying what the situation was in Singapore?
Before that, no. The advance of the Japanese army, when it landed at Kota Baru, which was known actually as the Beach of Heavenly Pleasure, from there down through the middle of Malaya to Johor, and from Johor on to the main island of Singapore.
Why was it known as the Beach of Heavenly Pleasure?
That was the Kota Baru means that.
That's the English interpretation.
That's
of the
English
word.
Interpretation, yes.
How long had you been in Singapore yourself?
Since July 1941.
Did the situation seem to be chaotic or well organised in Singapore when the Japanese attack got nearer?
Disorganised. Chaotic.
In what way?
People were leaving on small ships to get away, especially civilians. Some army units, too, were evacuated from Singapore to Java. From there, some of the units went by ship over to Australia.
Did there seem to be any chance of you being evacuated?
No.
Did you know that?
Yes.
Who told you?
We were stationed in a factory at Tank Road near Fort Canning. We had heard that the Japanese were advancing swiftly on Singapore, and some men wanted to get away before their arrival. When we went outside into the street, there were military policemen there demanding to know where we were going. And the men said, I wasn't one. Men said, we are going to escape. We are going to find a ship to get away from this place. The military policeman said, you don't escape at all until after the surrender, if and when it takes place. If you try to escape before then, you will be guilty of... If you left before the surrender, you will be found guilty of desertion. So no one left to try and get down to a boat either for Sumatra or Java or India.
Can you describe to me the circumstances under which you first came across the Japanese?
I was being driven in a 3-ton truck along a road near Singapore, not in the city, and a squad of Japanese dressed in white being their mourning colour, not black, with their rifles and bayonets, and shouted on us to halt. They put their hands up. But we didn't. We drove into them and killed them all. That was the first time I'd seen a Japanese dead or alive.
Was this on the 15th of February?
No. This was on the 13th.
What was the next time you came across the Japanese?
When we were in this factory at Tank Road, we had heard from our officer that a surrender had taken place. Then some Japanese soldiers came in to the factory. That was the first time I had seen them face to face. They came, one of them, a private soldier, asked me for money, cigarettes, a watch. He saw I was wearing a Seiko wristwatch, and he pulled it off my wrist.
Did you give him anything else?
He asked for the name of my unit, my name. So I told him, our law is to give you my name, rank and number. That is all.
What was his reaction to that?
He said, oh, so.
He just accepted it?
He just accepted it. There was no point of me saying what my unit was. They already knew.
How did these first Japanese behave towards they knew the captured British?
Well, they said, you will go to a camp when you will be looked after comfortably. You will have good beds, lots of food, and you will march to the camp from here. And take everything you need with you. So we marched out and marched right across the island to Changi. Now, Changi also has a jail. In that jail, they'd put civilian internees, mainly ladies. And the ladies waved to us with their white handkerchiefs. But we moved into the Changi prisoner of war proper, camp proper.
Were you kept together with all the signalers in Changi?
Yes. All the signals people were all with each other, and we were stationed in the Nafi block overlooking the Padang, which is a cricket ground, overlooking the Straits of Johor and Pulau Ubin, which is a small island in the middle across from Johor itself.
Were you under the charge of your own officers?
Yes, indeed.
And did things seem to be well organised there?
Yes, we were well organised under our own officers. The Japanese told us, you will continue just as you were under your own officers. That is, from generals right down the line until it reaches you. But all the orders will be given by us and transmitted to the officers who will tell you what to do.
Did you see much of the Japanese there?
Yes. They were mainly on patrol. But they were in trucks going past, and they would stop and come in to the various units and search the place, mainly looking for radio sets, concealed radio sets.
Did they find any, do you know?
Yes.
What happened to those who had them?
They took them away. It was mainly the signals people who were the operators. But they only found one radio set, but no one would have owned up to possessing it. So they just took it away and gave it the rest up as a bad job. But we still had radio receivers, and moreover, we had transmitters as well.
Were you operating one yourself?
I wasn't, no. I was a teleprinter operator.
Where did they conceal the radios?
In a water bottle. The false bottom of a water bottle.
And could these radios receive signals from far away?
Not there. They could receive radio signals from India.
How was the news distributed?
The officers would call the senior NCOs together and give us a version of what had happened in the outside world. But we were not to tell the troops in case it depressed them. At that time, it was depressing news.
Did any people try to get out of the Chang'e?
Yes. Two people, an officer and a sergeant, went down to the docks and confiscated a rowing boat. Started to row out to a bigger boat, but they were caught.
What happened to them?
Executed.
Did you see that?
No, we didn't. No. We heard afterwards. The Japanese told us, if anyone tries to escape, you will be shot.
Did anybody get any help from outside the wire?
Yes.
From whom?
From the Chinese.
What kind of help was it?
Food, drugs, whiskey.
Did they have to pay for it?
We offered to pay, but the Chinese said no. But when you return, which you will do, that's good enough for us. The Chinese were exceptionally good to us.
Did the Malays help you?
No.
Why was that?
They were frightened. A for themselves, B for their families.
Were any of the Chinese caught?
Yes. Six or seven of them were actually caught in the act. They had gone down to a ditch underneath the wire with their goods to give us when the Japanese caught them. We heard afterwards that all the Chinese who were caught, plus some of their relatives, were all taken to what they would call the killing ground. That's at Nishun, 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 where they were decapitated.
How did you know about this?
Other Chinese who had escaped told us.
Were these Chinese communists or some other political group?
I don't really know. They were, to us, they were just our helpers.
Were there any Sikhs who went over to the, or other Indians who went over to the Japanese?
Indeed there were. Yes, some of the Sikhs went over, and the Indians went over, and the Japanese formed the Indians into the Indian National Army. And some of the Sikhs, one in particular, stood guard at a crossroads which separated the Australian prisoners of war from the British prisoners of war. And when you pass by on way to work for the Japanese, you had to bow to him. If you didn't bow, he would slap you Japanese style or club you with his rifle. The Japanese tried to subvert the Gurkhas. But the Gurkhas stood firm and maintained their loyalty to the crown.
Were you ever clubbed by the Sikh?
No, I was slapped.
What for?
For not bowing properly. You had to bow in a certain manner to the Japanese, very low.
You said that you went out to work. What type of work did you have to do?
We were driven into Singapore City docks, where there was a great deal of bomb damage, and we had to clear that bomb damage up and make it look as it was before. And also to the railway station, which had been bombed, and clear the station up as well. Then we had to go into Singapore Canal and lift out the dead bodies.
Was the Japanese supervision of these work parties reasonable or not?
No, it was not. If they considered we were not working fast enough, then they would beat us, which was quite often, because we thought, well, we don't work for the enemy, and if we can sabotage it, we will. That's why we were beaten.
Did you do any sabotage yourself?
Not in Singapore. In Thailand, Siam as it was then, yes. I'll come to that later on.
How long were you in Changi approximately?
From February the 15th, 1942, to September 42, yes.
Where did you go to after Changi?
We were taken by train in steel trucks through the middle of Malaya, stopped once at Kuala Lumpur, where we were given rice and water. The water coming from the railway engine. And over the border to a place called Bampong, Banpong, which is about 20 miles from the capital, Bangkok. And there we stopped.
Was there a camp at Bampong?
A camp of sorts. The place was flooded. We only stayed there a day and a half.
The huts were underwater, were they? The huts were underwater.
Oh, yes, yes, the huts were underwater. The bedding, well, of course, the beds were made of bamboo slats.
So, Bampong was just a kind of transit camp, was it?
It was, yes. A very wet and watery one, too.
Where did you go to after Bampong?
Well, we marched, I should say struggled, all the way to our first camp at Chiang Kai, Chunkhai.
This was a camp on the Burma Siam Railway, was it?
Yes. That was the start of the railway at Chiang Kai. Actually, it started before then, but that's when we started to build the railway from Chiang Kai up to the border, to the Burmese border.
Can you tell me what kind of work the Japanese made you personally do on the railway?
Yes. We filled baskets. They were bamboo baskets We dug earth, put these into the baskets, and lifted them up onto the track to build the embankment.
How many hours a day would they make you work? From dawn till dusk?
From dawn till dusk, yes.
Did you have breaks?
Yes, we had a break at 11 o'clock for a cup of tea, which we made ourselves in tin cans over a fire we made ourselves. Then at lunchtime, 1 o'clock till 2, the food were brought to us from the cookhouse in food was brought in petrol containers and brought to the camp by the cooks or the assistant cooks, and we had our own orderlies as such who would give us what they thought was enough for us in our mess tins.
What did the food consist of?
Rice with an occasional with some vegetables, cooked vegetables. There were plenty of vegetables in that area.
Did you get anything else?
Pickles, Japanese pickles. They called them Japanese pickles. They were, well, just pickles. Rather sour pickles.
Were you able to get any extra food from bartering?
Yes.
This camp had been used in the First World War.